Hey everybody, you're listening to Top Quartile, where we bring you stories from the front lines of growth in community-focused financial services. Hello and welcome. I'm Dan Marks, partner and EVP in Infusion, and our guest today is Aaron Chestnut, who is Georgia United Credit Union's Chief Marketing Officer. Aaron, so great to have you on the show today.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me, Dan. I appreciate it.
Well, so to start, tell us a little bit about your background, your role there at Georgia United.
Well, as you mentioned, I'm Chief Marketing Officer at Georgia United Credit Union, and under my purview is marketing, but also business development and community development. So most people familiar with marketing probably have a sense of what we do from a media, advertising, social media, basically branding, internal and external, because we focus a lot on our internal brand as well. But then on the business development side, we have a at work program with many partners in Georgia, workplace partners, and also the community development arm does a lot of the community outreach and a lot of programs around our foundation that really support the needs of our community based on either supporting education or other elements of feeding the hungry, et cetera.
Super important work all the way around, and neat to see that connectivity, which we'll dig into later. What is one fascinating fact about Aaron that most people don't know?
I wouldn't say I'm a particularly fascinating person, but when people learn that I used to work at a company called Fathead, they seem to get a kick out of that. Fathead, if your listeners are not familiar, is a company that does life-size vinyl wall graphics of sports and entertainment stars. So, you know, working with different licensed properties. And then they've expanded since into other areas beyond. I should also mention, and this might not be fascinating at all, but I guess I could mention that I'm also a member of a recently formed company band called You're on Mute. And there's a lot of talented musicians on that band, but I play the triangle. So you can use your imagination on that. I might be the comic relief.
So has You're on Mute released an album? Or is that all hush hush?
No, we just we did our first debut internally at the company with a video. We did a cover of Journey's "Don't Stop Believing."
That's awesome. Yeah, there's a number of musical tie-ins for guests on the show, not intentional, but it's I think you're the first triangle player that we've had. So bravo.
I hope I'm probably the last.
we'll just keep that under wraps. Well, cool. For people who may not be familiar, what's growth been like recently at Georgia United?
Yeah, growth has been pretty solid. The pandemic definitely introduced challenges early on to our business, and a lot of folks, you know, kind of needed help with loan deferments and other needs. But, you know, the needs in this current environment are, you know, people need solid financial services and access to financial education. And we're happy to be a part of that. Deposit growth was particularly strong organically. So a lot of our focus over the last year has been on helping members with their loan needs. I think the key to our growth and success as a company is that we focus on doing the right things for our members first and foremost, versus like an obsession with the bottom line, you know, short-term quarterly goals. But one of the core values at Georgia United is shared strength. And we know as a diverse and talented team that there is great strength in complementing each other's unique skills so that we can achieve great things together.
Yeah. And so that kind of ties in to you're mentioning the interplay of internal brand and external brand, and sounds like the mission. Tell us more about how those relate.
At any company, I'm a big believer anyway, that the mission of an organization and its brand relate pretty closely to one another. I believe they should be closely aligned. And we're a purpose-driven organization. We see our mission is pretty simple. Our mission is to serve. And whether it be to our members or our team members or our communities, we're committed to enriching lives. And we have a rich history of doing good and helping people. And we know that if we continue to grow and operate a healthy business and brand, then that expands to our ability to even do more good in the communities we serve. And so I think that our brand and our brand specifically reflects our culture, our beliefs, our values, our priorities, and importantly, our actions. It's not just, you know, just not like what some people think of just a brand as a logo. I think it is far deeper than that.
In many ways, it's what an organization does even more so than what they just say or portray themselves. And of course, they all work together.
Absolutely. gotta walk the walk and, you know, talk the talk.
So Georgia is in the name. Is that kind of the aspirations?
Yeah, I mean, we started out in 1958 as an educators credit union. You had some educators that created the credit union. Think about, there were seven or eight of them that put $5 each into a cigar box and formed the Georgia United Credit Union. Now, it wasn't called Georgia United back then. There's a lot of evolving that's happened since 1958 and some mergers with other credit unions. But we've always had pretty fond approach to serving the needs of educators as it's core to our history. And then Georgia as an area in which we serve is a big piece of who we are and the communities that we look to help each and every day.
And you mentioned the history with teachers, and then you oversee community development. Does that lend itself to some unique focus and what sort of causes you support?
Yeah, we have a program called School Crashers, and that is a program that we created at the credit union. And we're in our eighth year of that program, but we've crashed, if you include the eight schools that we're doing this year, the total is 58 schools that we've crashed and have made improvements to that value over at the end of this year will have valued over $1.5 million in improvements. And basically the program, you know, people within the educational community nominate their schools. A lot of times it's teachers or administrators that are nominating with a quick essay about the need, and some photos always help as well to tell the story. And then we have a committee that looks through all of them and refines them down and selects recipients for those grants. And unlike some where, you know, you just kind of write a check, you know, to make improvements in the lives of the community, we certainly, you know, provide the money to buy the materials needed to make those improvements. But we also rely heavily on our team members and members in the community that volunteer their time to actually, you know, spread mulch and pick up paintbrushes and do all the things that these schools, especially ones that don't have, you know, massive budgets to support every need, to just create and basically better the educational environment for these students and for the educators as well. And we think it's a great investment in our future. We also support Junior Achievement of Georgia, and we are sponsors of all the different Discovery Center, learning centers that they have throughout the state of Georgia as well.
Cool. And does that help you decide what not to do in terms of your mission?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely, we don't use the education tie-in to limit us. We have several programs that we fund through our foundation that meet the needs of a lot of different organizations. We do can hunger, which is a canned food drive. We do, you know, collect gifts around the holidays to provide for foster children that might not have gifts readily available and make a difference in a child's lives that way. And then we also do service projects where we give each of our team groups, no matter where they are, as north as Dalton and as south as Dublin and as east as Athens, and we give the team members some funds through the foundation. And they go and they select a local charity that they want to support with both the funds, but also, I think, most importantly, with boots on the ground, helping them with volunteerism as well. We believe that volunteerism, as well as the monetary support, really, really is a strong combination.
That's awesome. And it's fun to follow what you guys are doing on social media and the School Crashers and the whole bit. So,
yeah, it's fun. It's fun for us, and it kind of warms your heart to be able to have the opportunity to work with a company and work for a company that has that servant's heart in their daily DNA.
Yep. As you progress in your career, and you mentioned Fathead, and you work for some other really big national brands that in some cases were, you know, no names and then became household names. One particular ISP that probably sent out billions of CDs comes to mind. How does that, you know, how does that sort of progression of roles you've had inform, you know, what you're doing, what you're focused on at Georgia United?
I've been blessed to have worked for some great organizations. So whether it's Quicken Loans or Fathead, First Horizon from a banking perspective, and you know, a lot of those organizations had great cultures and a great sense of self. And like you said, you know, cultures, not just in word, but in action. But I go into every business challenge with an open mind and a curious mind, because I don't believe that there is a one size fits all playbook for every situation on what, you know, what I can do and contribute to growing and meeting the needs of these great organizations. So, but with that said, there are some fundamentals that I try to apply in coming into any new situation or starting a career at a new company. And that's number one, I need to understand the business. I need to understand, you know, how the business operates and what's important to the health of the business. I have to understand the audience or audiences. It's very important to really understand who your members are, or who you're trying to attract from that perspective. Understand constraints. You know, every business has constraints, whether monetary or a headcount or resources. And so you kind of have to understand your constraints as well. And then you also have to understand what success looks like. And then once you kind of define and, you know, what success looks like, you also have to figure out how you'll measure it. So you know when you're approaching it and when you've achieved it and when you've surpassed it. And then you also, I think, you know, in my career, I always feel like you have to be willing to fail a little bit. You know, I think there's an old adage and that's probably said a lot of different ways. But if you're not failing every once in a while, you're probably not trying hard enough. And so I try and bring that kind of approach and mindset to my team and to my peers, because I think that's an important thing. Now you don't set out to fail, but you certainly, you know, be prepared to fail and then learn from those failures for future success. I do try and apply various things I've learned over my career as well. I mean, sometimes you get the benefit of hindsight when you've worked in an industry for a while, or even in a subject matter expertise in different industries. And I try and bring those learnings and to connect those dots to anywhere I've worked. But I really enjoy helping develop the folks around me, whether they're on my team or I'm partnering within them, or even, you know, when I'm working with other third parties, I really get a lot of enjoyment about sharing my insights and then learning the different insights from others that they've developed in their career. And, you know, leading marketing and business development and community development efforts at Georgia United has been really rewarding. I've been here about 3 years. In fact, a couple of days ago was my 3-year anniversary. And we've had a lot of fun evolving our brand externally and internally, driving growth opportunities, providing financial education and resources within the community. And overall, like we talked about, making a positive impact in our communities with those many programs that I described, some of which I highlighted through our foundation.
And you talked about freedom to fail, which is really so critical in kind of driving revenue growth, because, you know, like you said, not everything you try is going to work. And so I think that's a particularly useful insight. And sometimes it's a little bit hard in financial services. Have you run into, you know, that same sort of hesitation?
Yeah, you certainly, you know, it's certainly in a regulated industry, you have to respect, you know, your constraints when it comes to that. But I think that when you talk about failure and being willing to fail, a lot of times it's rooted in human behavior. We talk about this. We recently had a brainstorming session, and we talked a moment before we started brainstorming, and just like discussed fear. You know, there's probably something intrinsic about fear and human behavior. Back in the day when you'd turn a corner, or there would be a tree in front of you, you were going to go around the tree, and you had to anticipate that maybe a bear or a lion was there to maybe have you for lunch. And so some of that is kind of hard coded into who we are. But at the same time, I've found that fear oftentimes is not rational. It's something that the brain creates to prepare. And the best thing that you can do is prepare the best you can for success. But you have to also go in accepting and kind of being intentional about overcoming the irrational fear of failure, because oftentimes what you think is going to happen, what you're afraid is going to happen, worst case scenario, medium case scenario, oftentimes isn't the case at all. And I think that once you discuss fear and you put it on the table and you kind of don't legitimize it, but just kind of understand it as a healthy behavior, but something that you can overcome, I think that leads to better innovation, better open thinking, better curiosity, because you're not really hampered with anything that's kind of irrational in nature.
And I think, you know, as you mentioned, regulatory wise, I mean, there are certain things that are rules, and I've appreciated working with some compliance and legal partners in the past that under, you know, they play a critical role, but I've really not met any high quality financial services exec that's interested in breaking the rules that are there in place. And so
some of those rules are there for very, very good reasons to protect consumers, to protect industries, to protect companies all the way around. And you do have to respect that. But also at the same time, you know, I think a lot of great risk managers and compliance professionals understand that to run a healthy business, you can't avoid risk as much as you have to manage it.
Yeah, very well said. And a lot of times that managing a risk is, okay, I'm not going to take, you know, I'm not interested in the risk that I might break a regulation, but I'm interested in, you know, so from a failure perspective, it's, hey, I tried this campaign. Here was the rationale. It didn't work. That's the kind of risk, you know, failure you're talking about. It's not proofing an email. I don't think that's the kind of failure you're talking about. I think
you're talking about experimentation. You're talking about having a test and learn mentality where you can kind of test some things out and learn from them. And, you know, I like to, if I am going to fail, I like to fail small, if you will, you know, kind of control some of the variables. And I think, and you go into that test and learn mentality and you use a solid methodology, you're able to take risks and potentially have something not work. But equally, if you do find something that does work, it's a really great feeling, number one. But number two, you know, you can kind of double down on it and really expand the impact it will have from there.
Yeah. And so how do you think about, you know, using data and analytics to kind of inform that test and learn agenda?
It's kind of interesting because a lot of my career in marketing tended to be in the realm of direct response. A lot of call to actions with very specific either phone numbers or URLs and really kind of tracking different elements and, you know, kind of testing what works, et cetera. And I still do that to this day, but I've always had an appreciation when it comes to the craft of marketing. I'm a big believer that balancing art and science is a really good mindset to have. If you're a little bit too science and you lose track of some of the intangibles of the art, I think you can get out of balance. And I think on the other side too, if you're just kind of doing art for art's sake and really not appreciating the mindset or behavioral science of why consumers make certain decisions and what data-driven insights can provide more efficient and more optimized campaigns, things like that. I think, you know, if you can get those things in balance and really working off each other, if you can get a designer to understand why people make decisions, they become better designers. And also on the other side of it, if you get the data analysts that kind of understand that there's some nuance and there's things that can't necessarily be tracked cleanly, and you have an appreciation for the soft skills, I think when those things are in balance, great things happen. Data insights, they provide so much value. And they, when used properly, they have the ability to either validate assumptions or push you to unexpected conclusions. But it also creates the need for great discipline and governance. If you think about one of the most exciting parts of technology is that it's, you know, increased the access to key insights throughout organizations. And it is becoming increasingly easy to develop, you know, dashboards and analysis, you know, compared to like 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And machine learning is also like really exciting because it's really increasing the automation and real-time application of data-driven insights. But it's important for anybody in the space or that intersects with the space to not think of it as magic. I mean, some of the machine learning, it just looks so magic, but these systems are still based on programming and the initial rules that are put in place, and they rely on quality data sets. And so bad inputs or bad rules can result in misleading insights and conclusions. And that's really important to be cautious about too. So I'm a big fan, as we talked about, of test and learn and our ability to learn from the measurements and the data insights. But you also have to be cautious and know that what you put in and what you get out are connected. And so that quality, that discipline, that governance is all a big piece of the data-driven puzzle.
You talked about briefly there something about just there's nuance or sort of what's material, when I think about sort of materiality. Hey, if this number is off by, a little bit one way or the other, does it really change your conclusion?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because that answer is different for different industries and actually for different professions, right?
Yep.
Like in marketing, if I'm 70% accurate as far as reaching my designated household, I can live with that 10% imperfection.
Right.
In other crafts that are more in the finance and accounting world, those specifics and those variances become, much tighter. And so I guess in some respects, being in marketing, we enjoy a little bit of benefit in not having to have things with perfection from a data insight perspective. They just need to kind of be directional in nature in most cases, but certainly the better you can get, the more accurate your conclusions can become.
Yeah. And that's where I think to your point, a methodology is important. If my methodology allows for trying to solve for the nth decimal place, but if, and that's what I think is what's kind of fun in the whole revenue world, is oftentimes not trying to solve down to that level of decimal. But if I make an impact and, if something is a 1% or a 1.2% or 1.5%, response rate, then that's still compounding that over several time periods over the course of a year. And it adds up to, really meaningful numbers. So like you're talking about having an impact on the business is just one of those cool things. And so,
yeah, I think about the other thing that's, over the last like 10 or 20 years, the abundance of access to all kinds of data points is just enormous at this point. And some of the technology allows you to blend and manage those disparate sources together. But part of that discipline, too, is not trying to boil the ocean. You're, being very clear about what data points have the most impact, in the decisions that are in front of you at any one time.
Yeah, so very well said. I mean, just because you can measure quite literally these days almost everything, doesn't mean you should. And there's different indicators that have different impact.
I call that the Jurassic Park principle.
Ha!
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's where you talked about judgment and experience earlier. That's where, as you've taken more laps around the sun, your ability to understand, okay, what is the most important things to focus on and sort of sift through, what might be noise and what's truly signal is so important.
I've been in a couple of situations where I got to a not a conclusion, but like an insight pretty quick. And it was based on a decent amount of data that we were sifting through. And they were like, how did you catch that so quickly? We were still like spending time with it and didn't see it. And I was like, you build that experience to know where to look first, second, third.
Yeah.
And it just really comes with that experience. But you also have to be humbled with experience too, because sometimes you can get a little bit too dogmatic about what you think you know. And you always have to kind of check yourself and make sure that the truths of the past are still relevant.
Yes. And I think that's another one of the fun things about what we do is just that, there are tendencies, but every unique intersection of an audience and a message and a offer or value proposition yields, is a chance to learn something new, and the environment changes too. So, but that's also, I think, why it's so important, like you were saying, to have a disciplined test and learn approach, and one that doesn't try to create the expectation that you're going to hit home runs every time.
Yeah.
Because adding up.
That's a tall order.
Yeah. Well, and to your point, it either leads to extreme playing it safe because you never want to make a mistake, or in some ways it can lead to the opposite extreme if you're always trying to swing for the fences.
You might build a reputation of being a maverick.
Yeah, right. Right. That's where constantly we talk a lot about hitting base hits, you know, so base hits add up. And that's kind of the whole money ball experience they found.
That's right. On base percentage, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Love that book.
Yeah.
Perfect combination of a great pastime and statistics.
That's right. So, Aaron, we're kind of close to the wrap up here. What are some of the, you know, just your key takeaways that you'd want to highlight based on what we talked about?
Well, I think that, you know, in summary, culture and brand and, you know, walking the walk are extremely important. I think that being purpose-driven in any way for, you know, and it would be different for every individual and every company. But I do believe that there's a lot of value in today's world of having a company that has a sense of purpose, whatever that purpose is, and really make that a part of what you're about. Because it also, like I said before, you know, gives you motivation to grow a business and develop a business, because the bigger and more run it gets, the more good you can actually do out there in the world. And I think that, you know, it's a nice circle of life to know that what you're doing to operate a business also, you know, gives you the ability to give back to the people and the communities that are actually, you know, giving you the ability to run a good business, good solid business.
Cool. And so, you know, just kind of think about giving back. If you could go back in time and sit down with your younger self, maybe that junior marketer working at some of those big name brands, or maybe that as you were about to make the jump from, you know, consumer products brand to your first financial services marketing assignment, what are some words of wisdom that you might have for younger Aaron?
Oh, younger Aaron, that's an interesting question. I think I would tell my younger self that you don't need to have all the answers. You don't need to try to be the smartest person in the room. In my case, I never was, but I certainly tried at some point in my career. But instead, you know, I tell my younger self that you need to focus your energy on bringing the most out of those around you, or, you know, bring the best out of your teammates, foster great collaboration, and leverage the unique strengths and perspectives that each individual brings. The best solutions I could give them from my hindsight now is that the best solutions come from a diversity of thought and experience. And oftentimes there are several correct answers to choose from, not just one, and not always one from just the, you know, one person. More brains are better than one. And I think the other thing I would say, just more from a career development perspective, is, you know, work for organizations that have a strong sense of culture, a strong sense of self, and live what they say. I wish I could say that every company, you know, has that, but some of these intangibles are a little more rare. And I think that in hindsight, the best experiences I've had in anywhere I've worked is with the companies that had that true sense of culture and knowing thyself and kind of, you know, not only talk the talk, but walk the walk.
I think young Aaron would find that very valuable.
Let's just hope he'd listen.
Well, Aaron, thanks for coming on the show, man. Great to catch up.
Thanks for the opportunity. This has been great.
That's it for today on Top Quartile. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Top Quartile wherever you find podcasts on any podcast app. And while you're at it, we'd really appreciate a 5-star rating. And if you're interested in getting an opportunity assessment, head over to infusionmarketinggroup.com to learn more. Thanks for listening.